AM 1620.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
We're now up to 2,945 customers who have opted in, and we continue to kind of keep weekly projections from our national partners. So again, you can do the math. I haven't done the exact percentage, but 2,945 out of about 21,500 homes, so well over 10% on our way to 15-20%, and we're averaging about 100 opt-ins a day coming into this postcard. So we have not seen that trajectory plateau either.
Yeah, yesterday the mayor was doing his press conference for the first 3 minutes inside a tunnel that was streamed via Starlink. It wasn't great. He said for the recycling update, we got 2,900 people that are in so far. That's out of 21,000 homes. That's about a 14% rate of subscription for the paid recycling. It's well above his 10% that they had a goal of, and it's not really plateauing as they're starting to see, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of 100 signups a week, which is, you know, that's good news, obviously.
Fortunately, because we've got so many people opting in, that also means a little longer lead time. The expectation should be about 7 to 10 days from when you have sent that postcard or when you get a recycling can. We've had some questions, understandably, and we love that people are excited about the chance to recycle. But if you fill that out online or you fill out the postcard, we can't promise you a can will be there the next day, but it is certainly in process. So just be patient with us. You know, take about 7 to 10 days for that can to get there. But in under that timeline, we are fully caught up. So we're not getting 7 to 10 days because we're behind. That's just about what it's taken to get that can out to.
Yeah, it's not a backlog. It's just that it takes time in order to process these requests and actually, you know, get the can to you. So 7 to 10 days is, you know, okay. It's not next day service, although I suppose in some cases it might be. Now, the real news out of the press conference yesterday related to recycling, which I think, you know, if you haven't been tracking all of this, it you know, maybe it's kind of information that you've not even considered much before. But if you have been tracking this, what was the reason that the city went to this new system? What was the reason that we paused recycling for so long, which has been very much a hokey pokey for the last, gosh, even going back to Mayor Ashton Hayward when, you know, we discovered for a while that we weren't even recycling and kind of like, what? No, it's going to the dump. So the issue is contamination. And contamination does not mean that you put like the dirty ragu jar in the recycling or that you, you know, there was some kind of, you know, there was a mayonnaise jar that had mayonnaise. No. Contamination is when you put non-recyclable things in there, when you put stuff that cannot be recycled. You know, you've got cans and you've got bottles and you've got cardboard and you've got an old fan. The fan cannot be recycled, no matter how much you wish it could be. And so contamination is a matter of putting the wrong things in the recycling, and the contamination rate was, and I'm going on memory, and I need to ask the mayor because somebody's asked me for the number, and I don't remember the number exactly, but I think it was like 40%. It was like 30 or 40%. It was really high. When it's that high, ECUA would basically say, we can't take it. Or you'd get charged a penalty or all kinds, you know, and different things could happen. But it was basically, you had to take it to the landfill because they cannot recycle it with that high of a contamination rate. So in perspective, the goal was to get us back to, or get us first time ever, really, to a recycling rate where we're not just putting good things in the can mixed with a bunch of bad things, but good things only, which means that the recycling process actually works. And if you had been running 30 to 40% contamination, well,
last week we had collected more than 23,000 pounds of recyclables, meaning now we've totaled up more than 65,000 pounds of recyclables since the restart, and last week was 8%. The week before was 6, this week is 8, and we're extremely, extremely pleased with that result. And again, absolutely a completely different world of where we were when we had to stop this program.
Under 10% is really good, and that was always the theory. The theory was that if people are opting in and paying for the privilege of recycling, then they'll do it right. because they care enough to pay to be able to do it, and so they're going to be motivated to do it properly, which is, I mean, 6 to 8% is fantastic. I had been thinking that maybe the city could get it down to 20 or 25%, so under 10% is, yeah, I mean, that's an outstanding good rate of recycling efficiency.
The monitor site on North Palafox, beginning this Saturday, we've suspended that. I mentioned to you guys before we would likely be doing that because of the immense cost and overtime and all of that it takes to run it. I think it served its purpose. It was great. It gave us an outlet, especially for folks that needed help, assistance getting things out of their cars. And our team worked super hard for many, many Saturdays to make that happen.
So they're closing the North Palafox site, which makes sense because that's inefficient to staff. With people recycling at home, the volume is not going to be particularly high. So then the next question is, what about the recycling situation on Summit, where people were bringing all their stuff over there? And, you know, similar but not same, by the way.
That being said, I hear a rumor every now and then that we were planning on closing Summit. That's news to me. We are not planning on closing Summit. That facility, as has for years, will continue to be open.
Summit is going to stay open, but it's worth noting that at Summit they have a problem, and the problem is that, well, guess what? All the good recyclers, you know, the well-behaved people who do it responsibly and properly, are paying for cans and are recycling at home. So what are you going to get at Summit? Well, it's all the people who don't do it well and aren't willing to pay. And so you actually have a far worse contamination rate at Summit than you had before, because people are misbehaving, everything from leaving couches. It's always amazing to me. Like he was saying, that there's a whole bunch of cardboard that they couldn't put into the cardboard bin because the bin was full of things that you're not supposed to put in there.
Because there wasn't an opt-in opportunity for these last several months, actually, we saw the contamination go down pretty significantly at Summit. But now that the folks that are doing a good job of recycling might have the convenience back in their hands to be able to do it from their driveway, from their curb, we're starting to see that spike. And so we're trying to work through that.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know long term whether Summit's going to stay as it has been or not. We'll talk with the mayor about that this morning in our regular weekly interview at 7:40. But basically good news. 437-1620. Happy Wednesday. Look up in the skies. Again, it's kind of a cool arrangement. You've got the Jupiter and Venus are the bright lights next to the moon, which is a waning crescent. And it's now it's like the moon each day keeps moving down a little bit from your perspective. And so it's just kind of a neat thing if you want to get out there and take a look at it this morning. It's nice. The Reverend H.K. Matthews, who we knew had been very sick. We knew for a while had been very, very ill. Longtime civil rights icon. He passed away at the age of 97. Very good story in the Pensacola News Journal by Troy Moon about him, his legacy, what he endured. Everything from, you know, false allegations to, well, you know, excessive punishment, being gassed and being jailed unjustly. I mean, the things that people went through to work on the civil rights issue in this country are amazing. And it's shameful that they had to, and it's shameful that we still haven't gotten where we need to go on race, but it's also amazing that the people did the things they did and made a difference for particularly black citizens to be able to have their rights. And certainly Reverend Matthews, who I've talked with a few times, met a few times, and is just, you know, an icon in that fight for equality in this country and in this community, certainly. 437-1620, I'm Andrew McKay.
Sometimes an identity threat is a ring of professional hackers. And sometimes it's an overworked accountant who forgot to encrypt their connection while sending bank details.
I need a coffee.
And you need LifeLock, because your info is in endless places. It only takes one mistake to expose you to identity theft. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Staying healthy after 65 just got easier with Ochsner Novant Health 65 Plus. This means more time with your care team and appointments, more focus on your health needs, plus daily group activities and access to an on-site fitness center. Ochsner Novant Health 65 Plus. Accepting patients at 9 Mile Road with a new location on Mobile Highway now open. Visit Ochsner.org/65plus-Pensacola.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at vaxassist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Listen, little girl, you just go on and mind your own beeswax, huh?
Good morning, 520 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. I don't know if you're listening to top of the hour Fox News. They're talking about Hurricane Aaron and some of the people on the East Coast. You know, they're putting limitations on the beaches. People can't swim. And then they're kind of talking about, well, but if there's enough looky-loos who come to look at the big waves, you know, the today 3 to 4, later 6 to 8 foot waves that they're expecting to get, that eventually they might have to close down even access to the sand. If people aren't obeying the rules, I don't know what's complicated about don't go in the water when you can't, you know, swim. Nobody can swim a six-foot wave. That's terrible. Anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. A Republican lawmaker moving to give the president indefinite control over Washington, D.C.'s police force. Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna introducing a resolution to extend the federal takeover of D.C. law enforcement with no set end date, saying the president should decide how long that control is needed. Shooting threat forced protesters to evacuate the Texas Capitol yesterday. Demonstrators had gathered in Austin to support Democratic lawmaker Nicole Collier, who stayed overnight in protest of redistricting efforts. The Texas Department of Public Safety says the evacuation was triggered after a social media post urged violence against those keeping Democrats under police escort. And this coming out of Las Vegas, apparently a Justin Bieber impersonator snuck onto stage at a Las Vegas nightclub recently. The weird thing is he apparently fooled security there into thinking he was the actual Justin Bieber. This happened at the XS nightclub on Saturday night. Apparently, he actually performed several of Bieber's hit songs
before security figured it out. Oh.
And then he was escorted out.
I'll put that guy on the payroll, though.
If he was good enough to get that far, let him finish the set.
Is that more of a comment on the low quality of the security or a comment on the, let's say, easily replaced quality of the performer?
Yes.
don't want to say it any more uncharitably than that. We couldn't tell the difference. All good. Weirdly, next up, there's 5 simultaneous Taylor Swift concerts going on next week. No, it's a joke. It's relax. Shh. David, thanks so much for the update. 523 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. We got an execution in Florida, right? Okay. We executed another murderer, 1982. That means it's only been 43 years to have justice. 43 years. They were 24, both of them, both the murderer and the victim were 24 at the time. So he got to live almost twice her lifespan in prison waiting to get executed. We have to do this more efficiently. It's unacceptable to do it so slowly. But the headline has been, and again, this is always amazing to me, but the headline, the reason this has been making national news is because, you know, Florida breaks its own record again. Florida is now executing a 10th and soon an 11th person. Well, yeah, I mean, at long last, isn't that what we, I mean, you shouldn't be happy, okay? You don't celebrate executions. But you can believe they're right. You can believe that it's appropriate and deserved and the only just punishment without being embarrassed or even, why does it matter that it's the 10th or the 11th and it's, we'd only ever had 8 in a year previously ever and now we've had 10 and we're about to have an 11th. This guy, and I always tell the stories because I think that we lose sight of it. The story is the fact that you're executing somebody as opposed to the story being, well, what did they do? Well, Cale Bates, back in 1982, again, for perspective, this guy basically waits on this girl, who's also 24, working in an insurance office in Bay County, Janet White, okay? He goes into the office, he kidnaps her out of the office, he takes her back into the woods behind the building, he attempts to rape her. He stabs her multiple times. He rips a ring off her finger that I don't want to get into too much, but that, you know, does damage to her body. She ultimately dies from her wounds. And I should be sad that we would execute such a person? She had over 30 contusions, bruises, abrasions, and lacerations. He strangled her. He stabbed her twice in the chest, and she died from all the wounds. I mean, no. This should have been done in the 80s. It should not take 43 years to execute people for murder. Frankly, I think the governor, again, you can't celebrate executing people. But you can also believe that it's the right thing to do, and in a world that has become unwilling to give out just punishment in a timely fashion. You know, we have this principle in the Constitution that you're entitled to a speedy trial, right? You're entitled to acquit, and that's actually caused problems sometimes, is that, you know, when we can't process these cases. Well, what about the other side? What about a right to timely justice? If you really want to see whether executing people has a deterrent effect, and I have a lot to say about whether it does or it doesn't, but if you actually want to see whether it does, do it routinely, do it fairly rapidly. And, you know, whenever this subject comes up, I always feel like you have to, there's a lot of extra things that need to be said. My basic position on capital punishment is that it should only be done when we're 100% certain, you know, not beyond a reasonable doubt, beyond any doubt. And there are cases where it's beyond any doubt. This is one of those cases. He murdered viciously, beyond any doubt, okay, it shouldn't take 43 years to execute him. But I think Florida, I mean, you know, Florida's the place where we execute murderers. We shouldn't brag about it, but I'm inclined to almost in this world. But we certainly shouldn't be ashamed of it. Well, Andrew, you're a modern civilized nation. Yes, who believes in the value of life and understands that the only way you can even at all pay for what you've done, it's actually honoring to the murderer to let them have the opportunity to pay with their life, because you can only pay for blood with blood. Anyway, so yeah, this, to me, the headline should not be, oh my gosh, look at how many people Florida's killing. It should be, oh my gosh, look at Florida doing justice, you know, regularly, almost after 43 years. 437-1620 in other statewide news. We've got another record visitation year. 34.4 million visitors came in the second quarter already of this year. That is, let's see, domestic was 91% of all visitation. So foreign is about 8%, 8.5%. 31 million Americans coming to the state. Overseas visitation up 11% year over year to reach 2.3 million. With an additional 640,000 people coming from Canada. All the Canadians. You know, I always laugh when the governor says Canada, all these Canadians. But it's true. I mean, all these Canadians come to Florida for, you know, what you think are fairly good reasons. Anyway, so a lot of visitation. Great for our economy. Obviously, we're thrilled that that continues to happen, and our economy really does, you know, largely depend on it. But the worry that somehow I don't know, conservative policies or, you know, anti-woke crusading or, you know, whatever the case may be, that people are not going to be coming to Florida. No, people keep coming because we have a thing that they want. What is it? Gosh, it's salty and there's a lot of very fine particulate silicone matter near it. It's beaches, right? We have lots of beaches. And oh, by the way, just this is a total side note. I know the beach and the sand and the waves is like Florida's biggest attraction. And obviously, we have entertainment in Orlando, and obviously, we have lots of other things as well. And, you know, great food locally everywhere. I'll just tell you, for me personally, the thing that I did not know about Florida until we moved here, but my very favorite thing about Florida is not any of those things. We love the springs. And I will tell you that the single best purchase I have certainly made since I lived in Florida, and maybe like all my life, I mean, I don't, it's kind of hyperbolic, but is a snorkel, mask, and fins. Because we love, last week when I was on vacation, we went to some springs, and you get to put a mask on, put a snorkel on, put some fins on, and go swim around the springs, and you get to see all kinds of fish and wildlife, and you get to see the springs themselves, which are amazing. And it's funny, because when you look at these areas above the water, it doesn't look like anything. It really looks like nothing. And then when you get underwater, it's like, oh my God, I'm in a museum exhibit of aquarium. It's fantastic. It's wild. And so I never get tired of going to the springs. Check them out if you can.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Still no date set for a potential three-way meeting brokered by President Trump featuring Russian President Putin and Ukraine's leader Zelensky as Trump pushes for an end to Russia's war in Ukraine. Sanctuary cities and states pushing back hard in the Trump administration, the demand to end sanctuary policies.
Washington State will not be bullied or intimidated by threats and legally baseless accusations.
Washington State Democratic Governor Bob Ferguson. Tropical storm warnings from Hurricane Erin pushing north to the border of Virginia and North Carolina. That from the latest advisory from the National Hurricane Center.
That is where we will feel true tropical storm conditions. Possibly Virginia Beach could get a taste of those stronger winds up to 40 miles per hour.
That's Fox Weather's Brenna Rowan on the Jersey Shore this morning in Point Pleasant Beach. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 here at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne right now. It is 74 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies in Pensacola. Of course, we'll have our weather forecast with Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. Escambia County and ECUA have invested millions to expand sewer infrastructure in neighborhoods still using septic tanks. The county recently invested $11 million in a septic conversion project in Brownsville. The PNJ reporting that less than 60 residents opted to connect into the sewer systems due to costs. ECUA charges around $1,600 for a typical residential meter. Commissioner Lumen May is asking for additional funding to help cover expenses and encourage more residents to make that switch. The county also currently developing a $21 million sewer project in Beach Haven, aiming to improve the environmental conditions and attract development in that area. The DOGE team is working this week to audit the city of Pensacola, and city officials working with auditors to provide every bit of information they need. Yesterday's press conference, Mayor Reeves said it could be a while before the state gives the results of their investigation.
I'm not going to have an update for you on, we are not getting play-by-play updates or anything like that. So if you ask me what their reactions are, I have no earthly clue at this point other than what I've said to you last week. I certainly stand behind our efforts as a city, and we are here to be collaborative with the DOGE team, get them whatever information they want, and go from there. And I know that.
And Mayor Reeves said the DOGE team has access to all the information they want, and officials they want to talk to will fully comply with that audit. A weaker Hurricane Erin moving closer to the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Dangerous rip currents, pounding surf, and storm surge flooding are expected on North Carolina's Outer Banks, where evacuation orders have been posted ahead of the storm. Once a major Cat 5 system, Erin has been downgraded to a Category 2 storm with maximum sustained winds of 100 miles per hour. Erin is not expected to make landfall in the U.S., with the eye passing between Bermuda and the mainland. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Thank you very much, Rory. Florida is suing textbook publishers for charging too much. Attorney General James Uthmeyer announcing yesterday that his office has filed lawsuits against two companies that publish textbooks used in Florida schools. Uthmeyer claims that McGraw-Hill and Savas Learning Company have systematically overcharged Florida's school districts for instructional materials. State law requires the publishers to provide every school district with the best price they offer anywhere else in the country. Uthmeyer is accusing the companies of charging the state more than the law allows, pocketing the difference, and sticking taxpayers with the bill. He says Florida won't be a playground for deceitful profiteers. It's 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing a lovely day today with mostly sunny skies, 30% chance of rain in the afternoon, high near 92. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Thursday, 30% chance of rain, high near 91. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 76. Going into Friday, 40% chance of rain, high near 90 degrees. And by Friday night, temperatures dropping near 75. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, it is 76 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies. Of course, our next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Trump administration has announced that 50% duties are now in effect on more than 400 additional kinds of products that contain aluminum or steel. The new product categories include everyday items such as car parts, plastics, and specialty chemicals. Economists warn that the new levies could further strain the U.S. supply chain and raise prices for consumers. The FDA has approved the first ever glucose monitoring system specifically for weight loss from the startup Signos. Any patient can now purchase a Signos membership to access its system, which uses an AI platform and an off-the-shelf continuous glucose monitor from Dexcom to offer personalized recommendations for healthy weight management. Shares of Japan's SoftBank Group have plunged more than 9% this morning as technology stocks in Asia declined, tracking losses in U.S. peers overnight. The tech-focused investment firm saw shares drop for a second consecutive session following its announcement of a $2 billion investment in Intel. Futures are slightly lower. That's Your Money Now.
This commercial is for people like you. People who enjoy taking long hot showers, who never want to run out of hot water ever again. Hi, this is Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we are pleased to offer natural gas tankless water heaters. With a natural gas tankless water heater, you'll be able to save space, money, and energy every month. Plus, never run out of hot water. You could qualify for significant rebates from your hometown gas provider just for replacing your existing water heater with a natural gas tankless water heater. You're just a quick phone call away from endless hot water. Time is limited, so call Barbieri Plumbing for all the details. And remember, Barbieri Plumbing always uses the flat rate pricing system, so you'll know exactly what you will pay before the work begins. Call Barbieri Plumbing today, 850-477-8782.
License RF 1106-7749.
Ready to level up your future? George Stone Technical College trains students for real-world careers, fast. From welding to healthcare, IT to public safety, their hands-on programs get you job-ready in months, not years. And yes, financial aid and grant opportunities are available for all students. Affordable, local, career-focused, visit georgestonecollege.edu. That's georgestonecollege.edu and take the first step today. You can change your life at George Stone.
Looking for a stylish way to promote your brand or celebrate a special occasion? Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze now offers custom hats, a new addition to their lineup of custom and promotional items. From corporate logos to personalized designs, these hats are perfect for businesses, events, team gear, or one-of-a-kind gifts. Prim and Proper is still your go-to for custom engraving and unique gifts. From personalized drinkware to engraved home decor, every item is crafted with care by their in-house experts. Visit primandproper.com for more.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Good morning, 5:39 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We were talking earlier just briefly because the sky is so cool with the moon and Venus and Jupiter being so visible and so clear. And, you know, a lot of times in Pensacola, we don't get to see cool things because, you know, clouds all the time, it seems like. Anyway, I took a photo this morning. I managed to catch. I did not realize that there was going to be a meteor shower this morning. Well, or it was a photo of Andrew taking a photo and moving the camera accidentally, but I posted it like it's a meteor shower. It's meant to be funny. I hope you laugh. Yesterday, I had a chance to talk with Sheriff Chip Simmons, as we do on a Tuesday. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. Man, we haven't talked in 2 weeks, and it shows. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with, we have breaking news in the, overnight arrest of the Shanna Gully, the woman that you've been looking for in connection with this, front yard stabbing homicide, is that right?
That's pretty much it, yeah. We had gotten a call that an individual had a stab wound, and he was laying in the front yard of his home. Indication was that he had been dropped off about 2 hours earlier by a taxi cab, and then as we're during the course of the investigation, we figured out that Ms. Gully was also living in the residence, and that she had been there briefly, so we wanted to talk to her. She was nowhere to be found. But I can report that as I'm on the way over here, they texted me and told me that they have her in custody. She also had a warrant for her for domestic violence, I believe, okay, on the same victim.
Okay.
And so we're going to serve that warrant. I'm not saying we're going to charge her with a homicide, at least not yet.
Okay.
But I will tell you that we did find her. She is at the sheriff's office now being charged with the domestic violence warrant. So we're no longer looking for her, but we are obviously continuing the investigation.
All right. Very good. It's good police work. I have been telling people that I was going to ask you a question that I had meant to ask you at least 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. But we had this case with the LD Clarity murder, mm-hmm, and this case where these guys go to a party. They see him at the party. They think, right, he's somebody else. They call their buddies. They follow him in their two cars. They open fire, shooting, 50 bullets or something at the two, right, cars, killing him, wounding his friend. And some of these charges have gotten dropped over the years, which I think is weird. Maybe you know more about that than I do. But the one charge against one of the brothers who was in the second car is because he was the driver, not the shooter, is how I understand it. You correct me if I get any of this wrong. But the claim in the trial court and then the appeals court was that he had asked for a lawyer 3 times during hours-long questioning by your deputies. Your deputies failed to provide him his Miranda access to an attorney. Got a confession out of him, essentially a felony murder confession, because he said, I don't know why I'm being charged with murder. I just drove the car. Under the felony murder rule, if you drive the car to a murder, you're charged with murder too. And so now he's going to have to be either retried or, well, we'll see what will happen. Did I get any of my facts wrong? And then how do you respond? It's because I know, you know, the implication is that your deputies didn't do their job. How can your deputies not know Miranda rights? This is a basic thing. So I wanted to give you a chance to respond to all this.
Yeah, that's... You know, we gotta go back and talk about the interview itself. So we conducted the interview, and I'll get into a little more detail. I'll paraphrase some of the details, sure, in the interview. And then what happens is the state attorney's office, who is present throughout this entire investigation, the state attorney's office, okay, lawyers, right?
So they're watching the interview.
They're aware of what's going on. They're aware of how the interviews, okay, go. They're aware of the context. They see the interviews, and many times they're actually there watching from a screen.
Just like you see on TV.
Just like you see on TV.
Okay.
And then it goes to trial, and then the trial court has what they call a suppression hearing, which means that they decide whether this evidence should be suppressed or should not be suppressed. And so the trial court judge, the circuit judge here, decided, nope, it's legal. It's legitimate. And so the trial goes on, he is convicted, and then ultimately sentenced to life in prison or whatever it was. And then later on, they appeal, and an appeals court says, wait, we don't like that interview. We think it should go back. So let me first say this. If you ask for an attorney, we will close our book. In fact, this is what happened. We closed the book, we walked out of the office, and then this individual reengaged. So if you reengage the conversation, then we go back in and re-Mirandize you.
Okay.
We did everything we were supposed to do in that particular situation. And then this happened a couple more times. Maybe I should talk to a lawyer. And then we leave, and he calls us back in. You can call us back in. You can re-engage in a conversation. There has been a lot of case law on that. So what the
– kind of like if somebody says, I want to remain silent, and then starts talking.
Right. Yeah.
They know they can remain silent, but if they start talking, they start talking.
That is our stance. In fact, that was the honestly the state attorney's office stance before they took the case to court. That was the trial court judge, I think it's Judge Simon. That was his stance in the suppression hearing, and now the appeals court. And again, I don't have to agree with them. That's just the way things are. So now the state attorney's office, has the option of appealing that appeals court ruling.
Right.
Retrying the case.
Right.
So
okay.
They're still working on doing that. That's not up to the sheriff's office. I just wanted to make sure that people understood. We're not out there just, 1970s, cop shows, with Sipowicz and this type of thing. We're not doing that. Once he asked for an attorney, and I didn't look at it, so I'm paraphrasing. He asked for an attorney. It's described to me as that the deputy closed the notebook up and walked out the door, and then he knocked on the door and reengaged the conversation. That's why you have a suppression hearing. That's why we won the suppression hearing in the circuit court. And then again, they went to appeals court and they felt differently. That's the situation that we live in.
That all makes perfect sense to me. Is there any part of it that you looked at or know about that would warrant discipline, violation of policy? Anything that concerns you? In because again, the implication was that your deputies really didn't know what their job was and screwed everything up, right? That's kind of the general takeaway the public has is, my God, how come the sheriff's office doesn't know about this? Everybody knows you get a right to an attorney when you ask for one, and based on your account, it seems much more reasonable. And as you said, there's a suppression hearing, and you go right through all this process. But even so, is there any part of this that you're uncomfortable with, or that they needed retraining, or is there any part of this that you've addressed internally as a, hey, we ran up against this problem, let's change our policy? I mean, anything like that?
No, I think that when you interview someone, it's an art. I mean, you talk to someone and then you take opportunities to discuss things at length with them, and then you try to catch them in a lie. You do different things. Or in many cases, we talk to someone and they explain things and say, okay, we understand that. That makes perfect sense. Maybe you're not the guy. And that happens a lot, actually. I do not think that there is a violation of policy. We do not believe there's a violation of law. And I guess I would disagree that the public thinks that there was. I think people now understand that, judicially speaking, that there are phrases that are used that may not be, not all of us agree with. And, I've seen a lot of these things. And as I understand from the interview itself, if I read Andrew McKay, your rights, and everyone knows what they are now because they watch TV.
Right.
You have the right to remain silent, Andrew, and I walk away and you say, hey, I want to talk to that deputy, that investigator. And then we come back in, we can talk to you. That's been the case for years. That's not a violation. So I would respectfully disagree with the appeals court decision. But we live in a world of laws, and we'll follow the rules and where we're at now is that they're going to decide whether to appeal that decision or retry it.
Just a quick follow-up is, as a civilian who hasn't followed this case all that closely, okay, you and I talk about a lot of these cases when they happen. I'm not the kind of reporter that goes and follows all of them extensively thereafter. To hear that cases against these alleged murderers have been dropped is frustrating to me because I thought we had the bad guys, we knew what they did, and some of them are, cases have been dropped.
A multiple car drive-by killing a civilian.
I mean,
To be served. You have, there were a number of people that we think were involved in it. As you recall, we think that it was a case of mistaken identity. We think they were trying to target someone else.
Right.
There was a conviction, and I cannot speak for the state attorney's office. They had, if I recall correctly, they had dropped some cases for a double jeopardy type of situation that they didn't want to run into I think it was a speedy trial type issue. So I can't speak for the state attorney's office. All I can do is speak for the work of the men and women of the sheriff's office, who put days and days and months of work into this particular case. This is a case where a lot of people knew LD. We obviously knew of him, and I'm acquaintance with his family, and I've known him from the coaching ranks for years. But we were working at length on these cases, and all we can do is bring the cases forward, and then the decision to prosecute, when to prosecute, who to prosecute, and how to prosecute, is up to the state attorney's office, and then ultimately, in this particular case, the decision on what evidence is suppressed and what evidence is not suppressed is out of my control. I think that to say that the deputies did something wrong is I don't believe is factual, and I think it's a disservice to the hard work and the professionalism of the sheriff's deputies.
Switching gears a little bit, a story that I think caught all of our attention, I guess a former Catholic high student, I guess he's not enrolled right now, but in any case, a Catholic high student had been involved in making school threats against an Iowa school, and this is one of your cases that you at least started this case, right?
Yeah, we take all these school threats or what is conceived to be or perceived to be a school threat, we take those very serious. In this case, we got word that a student at that was still enrolled at Catholic
High School. Okay, still at the time. Okay, got it.
At the time, had made a threat. Their threat was posted on a northern, I can't remember, Wisconsin, Illinois, wherever.
Iowa, I think.
Iowa, okay. They're all the same to me.
Ouch. Go on. Go
all
on.
The Midwestern. Western, yeah, I know. States, way up there. But the threat itself was that there was going to be some violence at a school, and we could not discount the fact that that we saw the threat, and it could potentially have meant the school that he's actually going to now, which was Catholic High School. So we ultimately ended up making their arrest, and what they did with him and how they handled him in school, I don't know. I think I heard your story about the threat was made at a school up north, and our perception was the school was made. The threat was made at the school that he was attending.
Gotcha.
And so we took action.
Des Moines, by the way, it was Iowa.
Des Moines.
Yeah,
Iowa. Yeah.
You've also got some of these like cases that don't really add up. You and I talk about this a lot, where people tell you a story and you're like, So okay, at Oakwood Terrace, the former Truman Arms, you've got this concrete wall, and you got a guy who shows up at a convenience store outside the wall up the road, I guess. 17-year-old who's been shot, what, in the hand?
Right.
And the story, as I heard it, was he stumbled on an argument, got scared, ran away, didn't even realize he'd been shot until he got to the store, running away from this gunplay. But yeah, that may not quite add up.
Yeah, these are the claims that they make. So when we first heard that, I'm like, wait a minute, there's a big concrete wall, and you're telling me you heard someone arguing all of a sudden. You realize that your hand has been shot, and so you run to a store. Didn't make a lot of sense. And then when we start to putting things together, it made less and less sense as it moved on. We also got another independent call that someone accidentally shot themselves in the hand. So we got
which
a call
seems
someone
a lot more plausible.
Shot themselves in the hand, and then this argument across the wall that somehow gets shot. Some magic bullet that strikes an individual. So putting two and two together. We figured it didn't happen exactly the way it panned out, and that's just what we get. We get information that there's no way it could be accurate, but we still investigate it fully, and then we look at it at the end of the day. We write, hey, we don't think it happened the way it's claimed to have happened.
Gotcha.
Speaking of that, I got another one.
Oh, another case of a shooting where things are maybe not exactly what they seem like they're saying?
Case of the preposterous, yes. I think that this case, there was a guy that claimed that he was in a hotel with a female.
Not his wife?
I don't know their relationship.
Okay,
They were at a hotel, a local hotel. And he's laying around minding his own business. She's apparently in the hotel room with him. All of a sudden, he falls asleep, and then he wakes up with his foot shot up.
Story as old as time. Happens every day. Randomly shot in the sleep and keeps sleeping. It just happened the other day. Yeah.
And so we're talking to him. Wait a minute. You're sleeping, and you're not talking to anyone. All of a sudden, you wake up, and your foot got a bullet in it. And he said, that's the way it happened. So the lady was there. So what did you hear? Well, all I heard was gunshots. I had no idea. A gunshot. I had no idea what happened. Didn't see anything. I guess she was looking left, and the shooting must have been to the right. So,
the phantom sleep foot shooter theory is what we're working on here.
No one knows anything about anything except for someone's, again, got a bullet.
Well, sleep shooting is real. You can sleepwalk, you can sleep talk, you can sleep shoot. Why not? You know?
And
even if you don't have a gun.
He don't want to press charges on whoever this person is that somehow magically got into the room. And shot off.
Did you find a gun even? Do you know?
No.
Did they bother looking?
Okay. No.
All right.
He went to the hospital, and he's still claiming that he was dreaming.
He's the victim of a sleep shooting. Okay. All right. But as you say, it's what was your word? Preposterous?
It was.
Yeah. Okay. And we've also, and we don't have a lot of time, but we've also had a what, two self-defense? One where a woman shot a guy in self-defense, and then that's on Castlegate. And then you had another one with a machete attack self-defense, too, shooting?
Yeah, we talk a lot about protecting yourself in Escambia County. And if you think that reasonably you're in danger, you can take action to protect yourself.
Right.
In that case, there was a struggle for a gun, and she was able to get the gun and shot him. I think shot him in the face, actually. And that's the one case. And then the more recent one we had, there was an individual that got into an argument with a woman and attacked her with a machete or came at her with a machete. She ended up firing and shooting him once in the chest. So neither one of these women will be charged. We feel like it was reasonable for them to believe that their life or someone else's life was in danger. So
okay.
It's been a busy couple of weeks since you were gone.
All right. You got any good stuff coming up you want to promote? I feel like we ought to end on a good note. You know, so got all this death and mayhem.
Protecting yourself to me is a good thing.
Okay. And, all right. Fair enough. That's citizens doing their job.
And
right?
Being able to defend our deputies on this interview with the Clarity case is, I think, it's a good thing.
Okay. All right. I'll take it.
We do have a Citizens Law Enforcement Academy. We're in week three on Thursday. So that has been, we have over 60 people, right at about 60 people that are attending the class. Very engaged. We were at a training room last week, and now we'll be at
No. Go ahead. I think that you and I haven't talked since I drove.
No, right. Yeah, you're.
And now we're totally out of time. Training. We'll have to wait.
Yeah, we'll have to do it next.
I will tell you, I hate this shuffle steering. Oh, I hate the shuffle. I can't do it. I've tried. I have tried to do it, and I'm telling you, I don't care how good Deputy Cole is. He's taught me, and I hate it.
It's
not comfortable.
It is you.
It is. Yeah. Do you like it?
No. Well, I mean, it's what you're comfortable with, and I think once you get used to it, you're a little bit more comfortable with that sort of steering.
Okay. All right. I get the value, but okay. We'll have to talk about that next time. I completely forgot that happened since we talked. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for clarifying some of these things. And, man, please tell your folks we appreciate what they do, because we really do.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
If my dog Ginger could speak English, you'd hear her say she wants her own doggy vacation at Play and Stay Pet Daycare when I go on vacation. But since she doesn't speak English, I'm going to translate. What's that? Play and Stay Pet Daycare is the only pet daycare in Pensacola with an on-site veterinarian. And they're cage-free with large indoor and outdoor play areas where you love to run and romp with your friends. So where are they? That's right. Play and Stay Pet Daycare is at 4220 North Davis Highway, across from Bailey's Farmers Market, online at olivebranchpethospital.com. Who's a good girl? Yeah.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up. But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
When you need any job done outdoors, you need 5-Star Outdoor Services. They handle it all. Lawn care, landscaping, power washing, concrete, clearing, decks, privacy fencing, you name it, they can do it. With pride in their work and at a price that's right. 5-Star Outdoor Services is a local company with your satisfaction their main goal. Dependable, reliable, and affordable. See for yourself. Google 5-Star Outdoor Services or check them out on Facebook for all jobs outdoors. 5-Star Outdoor Services. Love electronics? Join the award-winning team at ADX Communications, home of Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, ESPN 1330, and Pensacola's Playlist. We're looking for an experienced electronics technician who can keep our stations running smooth, from the studio to the transmitter tower. Competitive pay, great benefits, and a fun, fast-paced team environment. Apply today at catcountry987.com. That's catcountry987.com. ADX is an equal opportunity employer.
Like what you hear?
Give us your feedback by filling out our News Radio Listener Advisory Board survey. Just go to our website, newsradio923.com, and fill it out.
Simple.
News Radio 92.3.
Bumper and Succotash.
We all need more Herbie Hancock. There, I said it. 5:59, David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David...
Well, good morning, Andrew. If my computer here will cooperate, it's been on strike for a portion of the morning.
It's a Canadian airline employee. Is that what you're telling me?
It is. Oh, I finally got it back to work. Here we go. Russian President Vladimir Putin has agreed to begin the next phase of the Ukraine peace process, according to the White House. Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said that includes possible direct talks between Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky that could lead to a trilateral meeting with President Trump.
I love how he calls it a trilat. We're going to do the trilat. Did you catch that hot mic moment? I think Putin's doing it just to please me or whatever. My buddy Vlad, you know, maybe he's doing this peace deal just for me as a favor or something. We're going to bring a big trilat.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.